It's Coin Talk, the proverbial beef in the crypto stew. I'm Aaron Lammer here in the Crypto Cave with Jay Kang. Today we are going to talk about the boiling spat between our fellow podcaster, Laura Shin of the Unconfirmed and Unchained podcasts, and the leadership over there at Ripple Inc., who make XRP. We're going to talk about Silicon Valley and the ICO plotline. This is the HBO show, Silicon Valley, not the place. And we're going to talk about the bunker that holds somewhere around 10% of the world's supply of Bitcoin and what post-apocalyptic movie scenarios that leads us towards. Great show. It's brought to you in partnership with Medium. Hey, if you're enjoying the writing on Medium, like, say, the transcripts of this show, which are at medium.com/cointalk, consider becoming a member. It's $5 a month. It helps support all kinds of great stuff, including this program. Oh, one more thing. The Internet Book Club starts on Monday, our first episode. It's on Safedin Ammous's The Bitcoin Standard. I think I said chapters 1-4. I'm going to change that. You only need to read the intro and chapters 1-3. We're going to be discussing them on Monday. It was a lot of fun. It's a great jumping off point for a lot of the ideas that inform Bitcoin and crypto as a whole. I highly recommend you pick it up. It's like $10 on Amazon. And we're going to have the author on for the last episode to talk about it. So please check that out. And if you want to get in touch, maybe ask questions about the book, it's hi@cointalk.show. Okay, here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $9,294.
Jay, live in the crypto cave.
How's it going?
No cockroaches so far.
Yeah, I know. I've been eyeing that guitar case where that mammal-sized cockroach just went under. But I have not seen it resurface. No shame here. We have cockroaches, too, in our apartment.
Shame in having cockroaches in New York. You can easily get into seven figures in New York in real estate and still have cockroaches.
Yeah, I would actually
Not that I have. This place is $350 a month, this basement where we tape. But I've heard that people do.
I don't think that there is any correlation between the price of the place that where you're at and the number of cockroaches.
No, I mean, I kind of feel like New York City cockroaches are like this separate phenomenon that's like, hey, it's not even gross. It's a city cockroach over here. Hey, it's the pizza rat over here.
That thing was massive, though. That was actually one of the biggest cockroaches I've ever seen in my life. All right, so speaking of cockroaches, should we just get into the news right
now?
Yeah,
let's get into it. People have been getting feisty on the internet. It's like NBA playoff time. Everyone's a little chippy, you know, in basketball. You see a fight almost every night. I feel like crypto world is ready to brawl.
Yeah, well, I feel like that actually is a bullish sign for me for crypto because I think for a while
you thrive on the conflict.
Well, no, because I think for a while everyone was just kind of depressed and all the memes, and there was not that much fighting because everyone was super poor at once.
Yeah,
and now like people are starting to go back to their corners. You know, like the raid is over. People feel a little feisty. You know, spring is in the air right now, and they're ready to scrap. So there was one big scrap this week.
Yeah, I feel like this one hit close to my heart because we're fans of Laura Shin and her show.
Yeah, CoinTalk's ombudsman.
Ombudsman, yeah. She's corrected some of my numerous errors.
I feel like she's gotten to like 1% of our factual errors on this, but it was a very long email detailing several of our factual errors.
Side note, so when we were prepping to talk about this, we were looking at her show. Her podcast is called Unconfirmed.
Unchained.
Well, she has two. She has Unchained and Unconfirmed. I think you're right. Unchained is the one, the episode we're talking about. It has a disclosure in the description that says, I own Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I was like, man, what if we had to do that? I don't even know what we would say. It's like, Aaron has like tons of shit in his bag. A bunch of them he got bad entries on.
Darkrest.
Several of them have been delisted and he can't move them. Jay may or may not have some Bitcoin. If he doesn't, he's FOMOing.
Yeah, exactly. If Jay was not too lazy to buy altcoins right now, these are the coins that he would have.
But anyway, so Laura does this show. It's a great show. She has on lots of CEOs. I mean, her guest list is mostly the people behind these coins.
Yeah, yeah. She does not go our route, which is to invite on degenerate gamblers.
I feel like we like are both on the degenerate journalist and degenerate gamblers yeah. list, but we haven't had that many people who are actually like building
yeah.
the stuff yeah. that we're talking about. So that is kind of what she normally does in the show. And I'm always curious because I do listen to the show and I always sort of think about this decision to have people talk about their own work. These are people who have literally billions of dollars at stake in how the public perceives their projects.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily people that I associate with deep honesty, but it's interesting. I listen. And if I have heard someone on the show, it does affect whether I'd want to buy that coin.
Yeah, look, it's a dance that all journalists have to do for yeah. a certain, especially tech journalists, I think, more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe like celebrity profilers, which is it worth having this person on in an unfiltered forum like the podcast where I can press him on certain things
right.
or her?
And Laura, to her credit, she's not a no-coiner who's going to try to like poke holes in what you're doing necessarily.
And she is interested in the world, so she's yeah. not a troll.
Like, not
I
at
think
all.
If you and I had on her guest list, one of us,
Jay,
me, would spend most of the
one
time.
There's only one troll. Who's
yeah,
on
would
this
spend
show.
Most of the time trolling and asking absurd questions and trying to corner them into like, you know, stupid debate trick stuff.
Yeah,
she doesn't do that because
no.
she is a curious person and a real journalist, and she's trying to get these things out. So,
and she's like generally takes the attitude of like let people like you know represent themselves yeah. how they want to represent
yeah,
themselves.
I do not take that.
So she was going to do a show on Ripple. I guess she hadn't done a show on Ripple. I mean, Ripple is this weird anomaly where it is one of the biggest coins, but it also almost exists outside of the rest of a lot of these coins, like in a different sort of business realm. And so she was trying to get on Brad Garlinghouse, who runs Ripple Inc. He's yeah. the CEO of Ripple Inc. And they were kind of giving the runaround. This, I had a lot of empathy for this. Because I've gotten the runaround before by some PR apparatuses. And they were like, we're not actually going to hit you Brad Garlinghouse, but like, we got you the next best thing, this other guy.
Yeah.
And she basically negotiated with them and they kind of didn't want to budge. And so she was like, well, fine, I'm going to do it with these two other guys who she had booked. One of whom is Ryan Selkis, who I admire. Anyway, the Ripple dudes kind of freaked out on Twitter and we're kind of like accusing of her of acting in bad faith and trying to argue their way on.
Yeah. Yeah. And then their like army of Ripple fans also swarmed Laura's Twitter account and were making all sorts of crazy accusations towards her, which is really this sort of sad state of discourse in America right now. Where this is something I say to my wife quite a bit, which is that every time one of these things happen, which is that it seems like if you read Twitter that everybody is very obsessed with journalism, you know?
Yeah.
And that everyone thinks about journalism and journalistic ethics all the time. And yet, you would think, if that is true, that journalism business would be doing a little bit better, you know?
Nah. I think most people don't care. Like, especially in the crypto world, journalism's a pretty dirty word, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what it is. Like, essentially, if you are part of the media and you say something that somebody doesn't like, and this has happened to me maybe 30 times, you know, where yep. you get swarmed with people now who do not say, hey, you said something that I didn't like. I think you're full of shit and I hate you. They bring up these very granular and oftentimes almost always wrong assumptions about what journalism is supposed to be and try to get you fired. Like, that's the new normal.
If I sort of evaluated the whole exchange, I think I'd call a technical foul on both parties. I'd be like,
really?
Well, I don't think she had to like totally like air the dirty laundry quite as openly. Let's play a little bit of this. Okay. All right.
If Ripple is going to participate, I want the CEO. I always get the CEO. I got the CEO of Shapeshift, Polychain, Zappo, BitGo, MyCrypto, Chain, BitPesa, 0x, BTCC, and others. I told the PR woman that I was taking the option of anyone but Brad off the table. So their two choices were either Brad or no one from Ripple. He did not respond. For the record, I've put Ripple on the Forbes FinTech 50 list for 3 years straight. They were the only company I cover to send me a holiday card last year, just weeks before Brad refused to come on my show. They also invited me to interview Brad at their company offsite last fall, which I couldn't make. And now here we are, from invitations and holiday cards to the cold shoulder.
Okay, so you get the idea. I don't think she's in the wrong, but, you know, she did dedicate, like, the first 10 minutes of the show to airing these, like, Ripple dudes out pretty hard, which I respect.
Yeah.
I understand why they, like, are annoyed with her and she's annoyed with them. But as an impartial third party, an investor. Hey, I'm just speaking as an investor here.
That's not an impartial third party, by
the way. Totally not an impartial third party. The constant thin-skinnedness of the people behind Ripple speaks volumes about what they're doing.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, how many Ripple fights have there been now? I mean, I feel like you and I get some of it just for making fun of Ripple on our podcast, which I don't think anyone who listens to should take seriously as anything, especially not like a long-term referendum on whether or not this thing is an investable project.
Look,
or not.
The way we talk about Ripple and our investment track record, everyone should be happy. We've been making fun of Ripple, and we've been failing in all of our investments. So you're probably going to do well. And if you've been holding Ripple, you are doing well. So why are you fucking complaining so much?
I do wonder sometimes what a portfolio would look like if they just went the opposite direction of everything that we did. So, like, you know, like, there are these, like, people who place their bets online of NFL writers.
Yeah.
And for times I've just faded them because I don't, you know, either I have a personal problem with them or I just think that they're always wrong or that I think it's funny. Sometimes it really works. And I feel like if somebody just faded us consistently, that they would do pretty well.
If you've been fading us, you'd do well. And if you've been buying Ripple, you'd do well. And none of the arguments that I would make against Ripple or I think Laura Shin would make against Ripple necessarily mean Ripple is a bad investment.
No.
Most of these arguments are that Ripple is a bad concept that's kind of shitty for crypto and is not actually decentralized and it's controlled by a company, Ripple Inc., and that's a huge problem.
And
that's not a reason not to invest.
It is barely a cryptocurrency and that the use case is specious at best. And it's not just Laura Shin that's gotten it. Nathaniel Popper's, like, every journalist who has written about Ripple essentially has gotten Ripple shamed in this sort of way. So I have one question for you, Aaron, which is that when you and I do track some of this stuff on Twitter, who are these fucking Ripple fans? Our friend Joe Wiesenthal got it from the Ripple fans too. Like, I don't get who Ripple fans are.
Well, I'm assuming they're people who bought in when Ripple was like $3. Most of, like, I think they're people who really need Ripple to go back
up.
Oh,
so you think they're not people who bought in at, like, you know, 0.7
cents? I think they're both. Someone was describing to me that people who are buying Tesla, you know, Tesla's getting massively shorted right now. If you're betting on Tesla at this point, you're betting on literally hitting the moon with a rocket. It's a cult of people who, like, just believe in Elon Musk no matter what. And they're like the Ripple fans of the stock market.
You are one of these.
And I was offended because I am a Tesla hodler and I do believe in Elon Musk.
I do not.
But I don't really know who these Ripple people are. And I also don't understand why, out of all of these projects, there's crazy people in all these projects. There's crazy Ethereum teens out there.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
No, but there's something dark about the Ripple fans. Like, there's something Gamergate about them. There's something about, and I think it comes from the top down, that it attracts people like the people who are running it, who are very weirdly thin-skinned and weirdly believe that negative press coverage is a huge threat to what they're doing.
Okay. I figured out who they remind me of, and this is a group that I've run across once.
Yeah.
Who still sometimes, you know, will tweet at me.
Yeah.
They're like MLS fans to me.
I was wondering who you were gonna offend there. Like, it could have gone so many different directions.
Yeah, there have been a lot.
MLS fans,
DFS, Daily Fantasy fans, Jordan Peterson fans, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fans. There's been a lot. But
is the hottest take you've ever brought to this program, that Ripple fans are the MLS fans of crypto.
Let me explain. It really is that they sort of have this built-in inferiority complex, right? Because the thing that they support gets shit on by almost everybody who's a layperson in that field. So, like, if you are into sports, and maybe this has changed over the last 5 years or so, but it used to be like, if you look 5 years ago, everybody just shits on MLS, being like, why would you watch that? It's a bunch of out of shape guys who went to UConn running around, you know, and a bunch of, like, cast-offs from Europe and Mexico. And so that builds this inferiority complex, I think, and that the press is generally negative towards them, and so they hate the media. they have built a strange culture that to any outsider looks a little bit weird. And you're like, well, why are these people into this thing? You know, like it doesn't make any sense. And that contributes to that. And so I think for Ripple fans, like the case for Ripple, like being a fan of Ripple doesn't make any, it's not cool. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, okay, so the future of Ripple is that bank transfers between two countries that do not do that much business with one another. So for example, trying to send money from Argentina to Sudan will be use the Ripple system, and it will use these tokens to make it the transfer faster and more like seamless than it would be before. That is not a very sexy story, you know? And so that's why I think when people sort of point that out, the people who are fans, which I honestly still have no idea why they are, they get extremely defensive about it, and then they congregate on, oh, the cockroach back, is back.
Damn, I think that cockroach is officially the mascot of CoinTalk now. Yeah. We maybe have to add him to the show art.
I just picked up my shoe.
If you could possibly like kill him without destroying him, so I can take a photo.
I am wearing Yeezys right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, oh, wow, that's a... So you, if
I will not be stomping on the cockroach with Yeezys.
If I asked you, you would not kill that cockroach with
those
shoes?
No, I'm not stomping on them with these fucking Yeezys.
So I think of these Ripple fans, they're people who brought like a weird beer to the party. Like they're just kind of like...
That's
like,
the same thing.
There's this weird like level where it's like, okay, what kind of a party is this? It's like, well, we're about decentralization, taking the money out of the hands of the government, creating an independent, transparent system that people can hold value. And it's like, hey, you guys, what if we like worked with the banks? Almost everything about what this is bringing to the table is antithetical to what most of these people came here for.
Yeah.
And yet it's strangely seductive, which makes me think that there's a new generation of crypto enthusiasts who is Ripple types, people who are like, I am into like bank stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, here's a disconnect that I have with a Ripple fan, which is that when the super FOMO phase of around Thanksgiving of last year was happening, people at my work and people in my social life were saying, hey, why don't I just buy Ripple? It's the most reasonable of all of these. You know, like it's the one that can exist within the world that we inhabit right now. That was their big pitch.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of them bought Ripple and a lot of them did very well because they bought it at like 20 cents and then they sold it at like $2. They did awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Those people are not ideologically into Ripple enough to start trolling people online. In fact, I think that they thought that Ripple was uncool, which is why they got it, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of why I bought Ripple. Yeah, I was like, go against my instinct here.
Yeah, but you know, you would think that a dedicated fandom that would go around trolling people and sort of making these ugly spectacles online, that they would have some sort of ideological reasoning behind it. And that's the part I don't get with Ripple, which is why I actually think that a lot of the Ripple stuff might be bots.
Wow. I mean, I will say there's some very high-profile Bcash trolls out there.
Yeah.
People are making Bcash rap songs. Dudes are like wigging out trying to convince you that Bcash is better. They remind me of like campus Republicans at UC Berkeley on the like green, just fucking yelling
at
people.
Those guys are ideologues.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. That's a person I recognize. Yeah. It's a real person. Yeah. I can tell there are some people who are really into Bcash.
Yeah.
For real. No joke. I think that the Ripple people are bots is a provocative way to look at it. If not bots, they're like
paid.
Or weirdly, like, there's some central place in all the Ripple communications of people getting together, and it's like, all right, guys, every day, let's go out 1 hour and reply to every thread about Ripple we can and put our fucking nose in here and say, because it's always about you're wrong about Ripple. Like, another thing that I wanted to talk about was, and I actually was trying to get him on the show. Maybe he'll come on and talk about this. Jackson Palmer, who created Dogecoin.
Hard G.
Adrian said it was the other way.
No, he said it was Dogecoin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jackson Palmer, who created Dogecoin.
Thank you.
He has this website called Are We Decentralized Yet? Which basically shows the concentration of the coins, how centralized the different currencies are. I think Bitcoin is like 35% and it's the lowest. Ethereum's next on down. Ripple is 98% centralized.
Yeah.
This is not him like trying to take down the company Ripple. This is just a thing he is like built and wants to like show. Like you can make of it what you want.
It's information.
You can say that information's bogus or that's a shitty way to do it or whatever. He's gotten deluged by so many Ripple people for this that he like is like taking it down or is giving the project to someone else. He's like, it's literally just not worth it for me. Twitter's unusable because it's 100% these like Ripple people just like adding me all the time.
I just don't get it. Like, I where did all these people come from? Like, who are they?
Well, let's talk about another thing.
Have you ever, you and I now know a lot of people in the crypto space. Have you ever met anyone who is really, really into Ripple?
Yeah, like my brother-in-law is pretty into Ripple. I don't mean to like air him out. I think like for certain people who are like, you know, I kind of do my research into like a few coins. This one seems like a good bet to me. Bought it and did well. They've got warm memories, you know?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they go brigade people online.
But like, it's kind of like sports. Like, why am I so into Monero? I don't know. I just got into Monero. I love Monero.
You don't brigade people, at least I know. You don't like go troll people who slander Monero.
It does get
online.
Up my hackles a little bit when people are like, Monero is like a money laundering coin. Like a little part inside of me is like, fuck you, dude.
Well, yes, it is, but.
Yes, and?
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Every subculture that, and this is what we found through however many years of internet subculture, it's very hard to predict which ones will go and do these sorts of toxic brigading campaigns and make people's social media unusable. So, for example, and look, I'm not saying that this is their fault, but like, you know, Barstool Sports, who's another subculture that completely hit.
Another group of people who hate Jay.
Who hate me, yes. You know, they have
shouts to that one guy at Barstool Sports, a big Francis and Lights fan, though.
Well, they also are big Bitcoin fans. I don't have a problem with Barstool, honestly. But like,
do they have like a crypto person over there? We should have
someone on.
Okay,
yeah, let's Lewis, have him on. They're a business guy. But
let's have that guy on. You're invited on the show.
He's been into Bitcoin for a long time. But Barstool does have this reputation for having fans that swarm, and they do. The fans do swarm. If you talk to the guys at Barstool, they don't, you know, they're like, yeah, it's a problem. We don't really get why it happens, but, you know, we don't encourage it. But, like, similar sports sites don't have that. Like, so, for example, we at Grantland had a pretty big audience, but, like, you know, we didn't have that type of activity happen.
Yeah.
And in that, you could argue, like, the people who read Grantland were different than the people who read Barstool. I don't actually think that it's necessarily true. It's just that some communities build up these types of things.
Well,
right?
I think you could say that the people who are working for Ripple Inc., the guy who was tweeting at Laura, like, hey, I really think I should come on the show. I like know this and that about it. I think he's like the chief scientist or whatever from there. Those people in some ways emboldening other Ripple fans to like come after people.
Yeah, but that sort of stuff happens all the time and the fall through doesn't always happen.
It's true. Like, you're always trolling, wait, don't tell me, but it's not like everyone from Grantland started trolling them.
Yeah, or like nobody else does. I'm start slowly building my army, but like...
Jay, I think that the lesson is that you should stop trailing, wait, don't tell me, not mimic the tactics of Ripple fans to try to take them down.
I would say that there is, with certain things, you can draw a correlation between the actual culture and that behavior. For example, you could say that there is a reason why MRA, men's rights activists, would swarm the accounts of women who don't like men's rights activists, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes no sense when you take Ripple into account. In fact, you would think that the group of people who would not swarm people would be the ones who like the stable.
Yeah,
like
a bunch of like bankers. Yeah, it's true. It's not like you see like Wall Street guys swarming the mentions of like stocks that they're shorting or something. I mean, is there that kind of activist stuff in stocks where people are like trying to like spread FUD?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, they're kind of spreading the opposite of FUD. They're spreading like pro Ripple propaganda.
Well, I mean, look, if they did that, it would obviously be illegal if it was traced back to a certain source that was invested in it. The thing with Ripple is it just makes so little sense to me. That I will say purely speculatively and allegedly that it does seem like I would not be surprised to find out if there was some sort of, you know, like social media campaigning that was going on in this sort of way.
You really got to watch out when the Russian Ethereum stands show up. It's going to all be over then. It's going to be curtains for our Twitter accounts then.
All right. So let's move on to another part of media, which is television. And
we're doing kind of an overview of like pop culture crypto right now. I guess Ripple's not really pop culture, is it? It's tech culture, though.
Tech culture.
It's troll culture.
Yeah, so did you watch Silicon Valley this week?
I did watch. I enjoy the program Silicon Valley. And they had been teasing like a Bitcoin plot a little bit earlier in the season, and then it didn't seem like it was going to happen, and then it came roaring back.
I feel like the link between Bitcoin and Silicon Valley has been going on for a long time, because what Pied Piper is trying to build is a decentralized internet, right?
Yes.
And so Richard Hendricks, who is the, I don't know what the actor's name is, but the character on the show, you know, when he does these sort of like stand-up speeches about what he's trying to build, it's always about decentralization. And yes. So Pied Piper this week was having trouble with its Series B funding. And there were some things written in it that the CEO did not like. And so instead, he was allowed one of the engineers, who's played by Martin Starr from Freaks and Geeks and Party Down, to convince him to ICO instead.
Yes, let's play it. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Guilfoyle, we're not going to suddenly pivot and become a digital currency company.
I'm not proposing a pivot. I'm proposing that we sell digital currency as a way to finance our new internet company. You wanted an alternative to Lori Bream? Well, it's right here in front of you. Pied Piper Coin.
Okay, look, I'm not going to bet the entire future of my new internet and everything I've worked for on becoming the next Bitcoin. You really expect me to do that?
There are very few things that I will defend with true passion. Medical marijuana, the biblical Satan as a metaphor for rebellion against tyranny, and motherfucking goddamn cryptocurrency.
So in some ways, it's kind of inevitable to me that Silicon Valley would have ended up here.
Yeah.
When this show came out, I was like, where are they going to go with this? You know, this is going to be like the same joke forever. This is going to like burn itself out over a few seasons. I think a lot of people feel like it did. But there seems like there's a new life in it, and that in some ways, crypto is a new cultural life in Silicon Valley. It's like a whole new world to make fun of.
I'm surprised that it took them this long to start making fun of crypto.
I feel like people wouldn't have gotten the joke until this year.
Maybe that is true, but they would have had to explain too much. Now, like,
and I was surprised how deep it went. Like, did you hear that part where they were talking about like securities regulation?
Yeah.
Wait, let's hear that.
Who do I hire? Someone who understands securities, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, your coin doesn't have to be a security. You could do a utility token instead, since you provide an actual unit of compute, although you'd have to convince the SEC. Damn it, surge pricing.
Monica.
You might not even need to bother with a moving average pricing strategy when you launch, but you will need to keep a close eye on statements from the federal government, South Korea, and China. So whoever you do hire should definitely know how to do all that.
That's a fairly like in-depth way to talk about this.
And very topical for
yes,
right now.
Very, very up to the news cycle.
Yeah, so the only question that I had about all of this, I enjoyed the episode as well. The only question I had was like, has crypto reached a saturation point in culture where you can do a episode on a very popular show on HBO about an ICO and you can actually kind of represent it well without sort of having people sit down and do explainers of every single thing that's going on?
I think that there's certain pop culture that sits as sort of the bleeding edge of introducing ideas, like South Park comes to my mind.
Sure.
And a lot of times these are shows that are written really closely to the news cycle, and we just know that this is written closely to the news cycle because this stuff about securities has really only been in the news for about, I'd say, what, the last month, maybe yeah. 6 weeks. So, you know, South Park would do this too, where they do the episodes in 1 week, and oftentimes, like, the stuff that's coming up in those episodes becomes, like, deeper in pop culture in the next wave as like writing catches up. So I would read this as this is going to be a year of a lot of crypto jokes.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably good. It's probably a bullish signal.
Well, look, their ICO didn't turn out so well
yes.
at the episode that we're at right now. But the case for it, I thought, was actually quite elegant. And it actually made me think that more of ICOs, which was that, look, if you keep relying on VCs, they're going to keep chipping away, right?
Yeah.
And that they are ruthless. Like, you could get the rug pulled out from you at any time. You are going to have to do things you don't want. And in this one, it was that they didn't want to sell ads on the Pied Piper platform, right? And she was going to make them sell ads. And so the case they made was that the only way that we can do this the way that we want to do it is to do an ICO, which is what they did.
The thing that struck me when I was watching it is, what if this was my first encounter with crypto. I'm a young Aaron Lammer. I'm 17 years old. I like stole my friend's parents' login to HBO. I've heard of Bitcoin. I don't really know what it is. And then you watch this and it's like the really clear message of the joke in it is that VCs are going to get supplanted by these initial coin offerings and that they're like at like an existential war with each other. And I do think pop culture can kind of inform how the future goes with this stuff. And the fact that Silicon Valley, which I know is a show that's like written very much from within that culture and is sourced with people are there, makes me think that that is a joke that Silicon Valley people would recognize and in some ways describes how people are feeling about this.
Yeah, and the rest of the episode did have like a referendum on other Bitcoin-type trend things, right?
Yes.
So there was like the VC guy who had $300 billion at a thumb drive and he was looking through a dumpster for it, right?
Tried like, 35 ICOs, only one of them worked.
Yeah.
Listen. All the coin I had from the ICO that worked was on a USB thumb drive. And my dumb fucking housekeeper threw out my jeans because they were ripped, even though I paid more for the ripped ones, and the thumb drive was in the pocket. So $300 million in crypto is buried out here somewhere. But my boys will find it if they want to get paid, right?
This reminded me also that, you know, in the overall reality bleed that's happening between fact and fiction and, like, real Silicon Valley and this, Alexis Ohanian, who was one of the co-founders of Reddit, was on, I believe, Colbert this week, basically describing cryptocurrencies as the pathway towards a new internet. But I have to say, I don't totally understand it. In fact, when I think of it, I just come back to Pied Piper, which is fictional and not a real technology or not really like something that I could see happening. So what do you think that new internet is?
So is Richard Hendricks just making Ethereum?
I won't try to weigh in on what he's building, but I think when people are talking in the real world about the new internet, they're imagining some kind of a frictionless Ethereum system that has something to do with micropayments and infinite storage and totally free, unfettered access to everything, everything tracked. I don't really know. I mean, I feel like I just wrap my head around how Bitcoin works. And when people have described these Toshi Ethereum land universes, I haven't totally like wrapped my head around what this new internet is all about. I know that dApps are going to be a big part of it, but well, I hope we get some people on the show who can like sell us on this vision a little more fully.
Yeah. Brian Armstrong, please.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to
Brian. We've never insulted you. All right, so let's go to my favorite story of the week, which is this was in Bloomberg, their crypto vertical.
Yes.
The wealthy are hoarding $10 billion of Bitcoin in bunkers. And it is the story of Xapo, which is...
Yeah, we've talked about Xapo on the show
before. We have, yeah. And it is the new venture of Wences Casares, who, if you've read Nathaniel Popper's book, Digital Gold, he is one of the real evangelists of Bitcoin at the beginning. Like, what Roger Ver was doing to people in Japan, Wences was doing sort of to Silicon Valley people, VCs, CEOs, people who are interested in other types of technology, the sort of Silicon Valley elite. Wences was the guy who was converting them all over to Bitcoin. And he comes across very sympathetically in
Yeah, he seems like, and he seems like a smart, interesting person. And of all the people, like, this venture is not like a get-rich-quick cash-in.
No, it is a way to store your Bitcoin in a way that feels secure.
I mean, literally in a
bunker. I know nothing about.
Literally in a bunker. I mean,
in a bunker.
And on a spectrum from the most insecure way to store Bitcoin would be just on an exchange. Then there's jump drive like systems Ledger Nano is what I have. Trezor. And then all the way at the other end of the spectrum is Xapo. It's a XAPO, which is literally a concrete bunker that's not connected to the internet with computers storing private keys for high net worth individuals, I think mostly, and family investment arms.
Yeah, yeah. So like Novogratz has his there. From the article, two Xapo clients said it houses roughly $10 billion of Bitcoin. Another person close to the venture called the figure an accurate approximation. Bitcoin's price, after all, is hardly steady. Now, I did a little bit of number crunching at my desk at work today.
Calculator Kang in the house.
Calculator Kang is in the house. That's 7% of the Bitcoin supply right now.
I think it's probably actually more than that because so many coins probably are actually lost that it would be even more than that.
Yeah, yeah. So in a pure system, it is
7%. Because we actually know all the coins that are in Xapo are there, unlike all the other coins on Earth.
So let's take Saifedean Ammous's Bitcoin maximalist vision to the end, right?
Yeah.
And that Bitcoin is all the money in the world.
Yep.
7% of the global money supply is $6.28 trillion.
Could we pay off the federal deficit with that?
No, definitely not. So that is 50 Jeff Bezoses in one vault.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of incredible. In some ways, in the present day, the bunker seems excessive. In the Bitcoin maximalist worldview, they're going to need a lot of guns around that bunker.
Yeah, well, I mean, so here's my question to you, which is that, look,
I don't know why I'm always talking about guns on this
the
show.
Idea of a small number of people holding $6.28 trillion in a bunker, you know, right now it would destroy any sort of world economy because so much wealth would be centralized in one spot amongst a small number of people, right?
Sure.
Does this actually make the case for Bitcoin itself taking over the entire world economy a little bit harder because it's so, like, none of these people are going to sell their Bitcoin or distribute it, you know? And so if Bitcoin does take over the world, it means that even just with this, you have a massive concentration of wealth.
Well,
does that bother you at
all? I'm not sure I agree with that. None of these people are ever going to sell or move their Bitcoin.
If Bitcoin keeps going up and they believe in Bitcoin in the way that they do, I think that concentration will stay pretty constant.
I do think that much of the Bitcoin in one place is a problem on several levels. And I assume that as the price accelerated, there would be more Xapos scattered around the earth and that we would try to spread out the Bitcoin amongst them. That just would make sense. You know, if Bitcoin goes 10x and there's 10 times as much money there, you might want to at least, you know, say, hey, we don't want to keep more than like 100 billion per bunker or something like that, you know?
I guess my problem is more that, like, if we try and think of visualize Bitcoin as being the standard for all wealth in the world, right? And that some of the ethos of Bitcoin is like, we're going to help bank the bankless and it's going to lead to, like, I think that what it basically has led to is that the wealth concentration that we see right now is going to become hyper concentrated, right? And it's going to just be the people who bought into large amounts of Bitcoin early. And that seems like it's a real problem. You have very little flexibility in that world because small amounts of people are essentially going to be nation states upon themselves, which, you know, already is sort of happening. But it will be accelerated for no reason, for no value, except for the fact that they own all this Bitcoin early. Like, do you see that as a problem?
You know, I don't know enough about the, like, current concentration of wealth in the world.
Well, just think about 50 Jeff Bezoses in, like, one vault.
But, I mean, that's what I'm wondering. Like, if you took the top 100 fiat holders in the world and concentrated their wealth in one Swiss bank, does the Swiss banking system as a whole have that much money?
Well, it's not even, it's just, like, there aren't 50 Jeff Bezoses. Like, there's one Jeff Bezos, right?
Right.
And
But there's the 50 richest people on Earth.
Yeah.
Which, let's say, are, like, somewhere overall around 50 Jeff Bezoses.
Yeah, no, that would get nowhere close to 7% of the total net worth in the world.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a major liability. I think these people are liabilities and, you know, Satoshi's stash is probably a liability in its own right. My guess is that the, like, gamblers amongst us would read that situation and say, probably none of those coins are ever going to move. Let's just look at it as a smaller supply. That said, if someone decides to, like, become a despotic tyrant,
that's
with
the
their
problem.
Money, I mean, and, like, clearly the betting odds are on Peter Thiel here, yeah. Right? I mean,
sure.
We know that Peter Thiel, and not just looking at Peter Thiel, the individual, but his sort of network of, like, companies and investments, could be like a major holder amongst those.
Yeah. Do you want Peter Thiel to be richer than he already is by several hundreds percent?
I'd be against it myself.
Yeah, so
but I am getting rich during that scenario. Now, if I go 100x and I also know that Peter Thiel's going 100x, would I accept that scenario? I think I probably would.
I don't know. I would think very, very hard about it.
I think you also have to look at this a little bit like the Force. You know, there's a dark side and there's a light side. And I would hope that some of the people who became powerful and insanely rich through Bitcoin would use it to do good, and that it's not an inherent system that those people would become like despotic tyrant nation states. That money could be used a lot of different ways.
I guess so, but you are still setting up a world in which there are oligarchs. You're setting up like a mass concentration of wealth.
Yeah, but we live in a world where there are oligarchs already.
Yeah, and it's not great.
I don't see how you disrupt currency and also end oligarchy simultaneously.
Well, look, that's the problem with things like Ripple, right? Where they start out so concentrated. I guess that the thing that I would think, and this is what I think actually will happen, and this is like my hottest take, which I think that there will be a mineable coin in the future that will probably be less centralized in wealth, and that because people will be more used to the idea of crypto, that it won't be as concentrated, and that that feature, that it is not so concentrated that there aren't these massive, dense clusters of wealth, that that will cause people to actually buy into a little bit more because they can buy into a more democratic vision. Like
KenCoin, it's for the people.
KenCoin for the people, like, let's do it. But like the problem.
So part of the way KenCoin is work is sort of like magnetism. Like if you get too much KenCoin, you like it repels other KenCoin.
Yeah, you can only, your KenCoins are capped, right? Like I actually don't think I would do that, but that if something spread and was mined at a pace where it was sort of, you know, by propulsion was more evenly distributed, I actually think that that would probably be a better vision of it. And maybe that's what the people who are behind Ethereum are hoping for.
I don't really see how Ethereum is an improvement in this respect, other than it's a different group of people who become the oligarchs.
I personally just don't think it's good for, you know, 12 random people to have 7% of the world's wealth. That's just me. All right, so
I mean, there's also like a timeline where like Zappo is involved in some sort of like insane like atomic accident or something. That the incentives to destroy
EMP, baby.
Zappo if Bitcoin really was $1 million would be intense.
But now, that would be a good movie.
Yeah,
breaking into Zappo to do an EMP to like wipe out all of this wealth,
so that KenCoin can reconquer the world.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, maybe the KenCoin should just fund the KenCoin movie. It should be a production house, and we should make all the dumb movie Bitcoin movies that we think of.
The Jay Toshi saga.
All right. So the second part of the Zappo story is how it actually works. And this is something that I think was very interesting to me, at least, which is, this is from the Bloomberg story. At Zappo, retrieving Bitcoin from the vault takes about 2 days. The company verifies a client's identity and authenticates the request before manually signing the transactions with private keys from multiple vault locations. Approval from 3 separate vaults is required for any transactions to be authorized. The company also offers customers a trading desk to buy and sell Bitcoin and created the first Bitcoin debit card to spend it.
Well, for starters, that's the first scene of the movie, is it's you during those 2 days. You're getting verified.
Yeah.
But you're really a mole who's breaking into Zappo to like destroy it from the inside.
Yeah, I'm taking like a mental map.
But you're posing as a wealthy Korean businessman who's like eye scan you've stolen. You're like you're wearing his eyeballs.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that sounds like pretty good security. This is interesting to me because one of the things we hypothesized, I think during the basement tapes, was that ultimately rich people were going to want to buy into Bitcoin through some sort of an ETF or some sort of a, you know, basically an abstracted way that that was secure, where they basically just owned stock. And this presents a different, I think, superior vision, which is if you really have that much money, just buy, you know, hire someone to buy a bunch of Bitcoin and go put it in this place that has a 2-day wait and the most insane security procedures in the world. As long as you're making a big investment, that's probably more cost effective than using one of these GBTC like kind of investment products.
Yeah, and I think that if you're like a Bitcoin purist, it is certainly the most pure vision of it. I mean, it actually makes Bitcoin seem very cool, you know?
It's cool to have an internet that's not on the internet. Like they just have like, there's just like a, like, you know, it's like just dead inside Zappo. The computers can't talk to anyone.
I'm picturing like a very, very old man hunched over walking like from vault to vault,
yeah, with
writing
big,
down.
big key thing, you know, thing with like thousands of keys.
And he's
on
like
it.
Writing down the private keys on a little piece of paper and walking it over.
Mr. Kang, you can come in now.
Oh, thank you. Oh, hello, Mr. Kang. Yeah, exactly. He's like, what will you withdraw? It sounds awesome, actually.
How was your stay at the Swiss town in the Alps, Mr. Kang?
Maybe we should put our very small amount of Bitcoin into Zappo just so that we could get the service.
I don't think you're allowed. I think it's like you have to like meet some sort of minimum, right?
Really? Oh, I'm sure.
We should try and get Caceres on the show. I know it's a long shot, but come on the show, man.
Yeah, answer all of our questions.
He's a friend of a friend's man. I'm gonna try and talk him into it.
We'll cut you into the movie rights.
Well, that's what I'm gonna say. I think we should just ICO this movie about us breaking into Zappo, and then we'll use that money and put it in Zappo.
Yeah, exactly.
Not actually make the movie.
We'll cut him. We'll give him a producer credit.
All we need to do is storyboard this story out.
Yeah, start a Kickstarter that only takes deals in cryptocurrency.
Well, there must be competing Zappos out there, or people must be trying to create competition for this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it's too good of an idea. And it is one that basically takes out, or seems to take out, the biggest fear that one would have if you had a shitload of Bitcoin, which is, what if someone kidnaps me? What if I get hacked? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And it also creates like a framework where you can imagine like hodling across hundreds of years.
Yeah.
You know, like post-apocalyptic movie where people are like walking across the like shattered remains of Europe to try to get to Zappo to like get access to these billions of dollars.
Have you seen The Land Before Time?
I have.
I feel like we could make a movie that was like where Zappo was like the oasis, you know?
Oh yeah.
And that the world has become a post-apocalyptic hellscape. And a small group of people are trying to make it to Zappo, which is the only place with money in the world that it's been walled off. And like, it's like Elon Musk and Peter Thiel.
Oh, see, in my vision, the world was a scorched wasteland and the people were walking to Zappo so they could get the Bitcoin out to like restart the world economy.
Why would you need a world economy if there's no world economy left? Like, what is Bitcoin worth? It's like
the key to rebuilding civilization is to get the Bitcoin network back up.
Explain how.
I think we have to cut this off before like we just turn this into a Bitcoin movies podcast.
Yeah, like the stoned Bitcoin movies podcast.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $9,294.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We are brought to you in partnership with Medium. You can find all our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes transcripts. Send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. We are looking for sponsors. We have big guests coming up. Jay. Big guests. You don't even know all the big guests we got coming.
We have huge guests.
Huge guests. You probably haven't heard that many huge guests on the show, and that's because guest booking is on a bit of a lag. But I'm telling you, we got a tsunami coming the way of the show.
Yeah, it is going to revolutionize Coin Talk.
We're gonna rock you like an atomic bomb rocked Zappo in the doomsday scenario that we are currently Kickstarter ICOing a movie about.
Is the end of the Zappo movie when Geraldo Rivera went to Al Capone's vault, they open it and there's nothing in there?
I think the end of the Zappo movie probably has something like the end of like Planet of the Apes, where it's like you think it's all happening on like a distant moon. And then it's like, no, it was Earth. We destroyed it all with Bitcoin. See you next week.